Welcome to the Ridley Planning Special Meeting Commission. On this date, Thursday, November 8, 2018, it's 5:01 PM. So. Excuse me, one second. Commissioner Custodio, would you lead us in the flag salute?
Absolutely. Please stand, face the flag, ready salute.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Can we have the roll call, please?
Commissioner Barcelos?
Here.
Commissioner Custodio?
Here.
Commissioner Hudson?
Here.
Chair Perez?
Here.
Public comment provides an opportunity for members of the public to address the Planning Commission on items of interest to the public within the Commission's jurisdiction in which are not already on the agenda this evening. It is a policy of the Commission not to answer questions impromptu. Concerns or complaints will be referred to the Community Development Director's Office. Speakers should limit their comments to not more than 3 minutes. No more than 10 minutes per issue will be allowed. For items which are on the agenda this evening, members of the public will be provided an opportunity to address the Commission as each item is brought to discussion. So with that, I'll open the public comment and to the public, and I see none, so I will close that session, please. Under a consent agenda category, recommended course of action for each item is made. Any commissioner may remove any item from the consent agenda in order to discuss and or change the recommended course of action, and the commission can approve the remainder of the consent agenda. And we, on the consent agenda, we just have the one item. May I have a motion to approve the consent agenda?
I move to motion.
Second?
I second.
Call?
Commissioner Custodio?
Yes.
Commissioner Hudson?
Yes.
Commissioner Barcelos?
Yes.
Chair Perez?
Yes. Thank you. Okay, we have two items that we're going to come before us tonight. So we'll start with, on the public hearing side, we'll start with number two, which is consideration of text amendment application number 2018-2 pertaining to exempting off-site temporary real estate signage for single-family locations. The resolution number 2018-13, staff recommends that the Planning Commission take the following actions. A, recommend that the City Council finds that no new environmental document is required for this project, pursuant to California Environmental Quality Act guidelines. Section 15162 and 15168C2, as determined in the Environmental Assessment number 2018-15. B, recommend to the City Council approval of text amendment application number 2018-2, ordinance number 2018-008, amending Title 10, Chapter 14, adding Article 1 to incorporate the allowed placement of temporary real estate signage for single-family locations. With that, I'll turn it over to staff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Appreciate it. I'll be taking this item tonight. So tonight we do have a couple text amendments in front of us, and we'll get started with the first one right here that has to do with exempting temporary real estate signage for single family locations. This up and ready to go for us. It's not one to work. Let's see.
Oh, can I have that? Sorry.
It's not plugged in?
No.
You just wanted to make sure I was paying attention.
Asked. There we go.
Perfect. Thank you very much. That's okay. So just as a project summary, I'm not going to go through line by line on the staff report. I'm sure that you guys have already read through those items, so I will try to make it as succinct as possible. But what we're looking to do tonight is to provide for the allowance of temporary real estate signage within the municipal code. And currently we don't have anything in our municipal code that exempts temporary real estate signs. That lack of language is creating a challenge for both real estate professionals and for our code enforcement officers. So over the last couple of months, we have, as you guys know, a very good code enforcement officer, and he's very active, and is even out during the weekends. And so because there was nothing in the code that dealt with real estate signage, he, of course, would look at those items as the sign pollution and was following up them accordingly because there wasn't anything that had an exemption for that in our code. So we were approached by several real estate professionals that asked if we would be willing to sit down and start discussions with them about exemptions for certain types of signs within reason, of course. And so as staff, we were happy to do that with the direction of the city manager to do so. So what we're looking at today is for the temporary signs, and these are going to be your traditional signs, open house, for sale, items that are seen as temporary. I'd like to point out that this is only for existing residential sales. This would not apply to a new development where you may see signs of, you know, X subdivision coming spring of, you know, 2019 or something of that nature. Those fall under a different and already are within the code. We do already have those items outlined within the code. So this is only for existing residences. The provision, of course, would be citywide. It would not be specific to just one location. It would be across the entire city. And want to point out that we did work with the local real estate professionals to establish this criteria before it's being delivered to you tonight. So this has been vetted by the professional real estate community within Reedley to make sure that these are provisions that they felt were appropriate and realistic for them. So the section itself would be 10.14.10i, it adds division I, and it starts to simply state that real estate signage, that it gives the intent of what we're looking to do first, the reason why the council would be interested in considering an exemption of this nature. For these reasons, of course, right here, the council wants to promote local economy, tourism, and the further purposes of beautifying the city. They want to make sure that they have appropriate sign standards and exemptions as needed within place. This would go for the for sale or for lease. This language is already found within the code in a different location. Which is the reason why it also has talks of, as you can see, for multifamily and for commercial. So this simply comes from some of the sign standards that we have in other areas with the addition of the items for the single family and the duplex. The most important part that I'd like to point out there is that it has the 4 foot, not to exceed a 4 square foot maximum for these signs for single family and for duplexes. Most specifically, the concern that they were having was the amount and placement of open house signs. And that's what really prompted the discussion with our code enforcement and with the real estate professionals. So we put a little more focus onto those items in the amendment that we're bringing to you tonight. So first, for your on-site open house signage, they are only allowed between the hours of 10 a.m. and 7 p.m. and they're not to exceed, of course, the 4 square foot, consistent with the provision just before it. And for any of the off-site residential, same exact time, 10 to 7, not to exceed the 4 square feet. But the most important item that you'll want to note there is that they are not located in the public right-of-way. They're not allowed to be located within the public right-of-way. And you can't have more than 6 of them for one open house instance. We had initially started with 4, which is a pretty standard number that we'll see in some other areas. But the real estate professionals had come and asked if we would be willing to amend that number to 6, and we still thought that was an appropriate number of signs, you know, to come from various northeast, west, south locations. We felt that was still appropriate. I won't go through each one of these for you guys, but these right here are the reasons that will go in the actual ordinance before council, the reasons why we feel that an exemption is an appropriate action to take. And the reasons why they would have an interest in it, and making it very clear in the ordinance and then into the municipal code the reason why there's an exemption for these type of signs. What that does is that makes sure that council is making a good informed decision, understanding why these things are being recommended, and we of course would want to make sure that the Planning Commission felt comfortable with those same things. In general, it really comes down to the fact of being supportive of the local economy, but also being aware of the amount of signs and the type of signs that are being placed in your community and making sure that you do have good regulations to look over those. It also points to the fact that these are temporary in nature, and because real estate activities are not at one business location or even multiple business locations with, where you would typically see advertising signs. Their business, for explanation purposes, depends on what home is being sold. So we would expect to see these signs need to be temporarily in locations from time to time. Just a couple graphic representations here of what we'd be looking at. So for both of these signs, this typical sign dimension for each one of these is 24 by 20, which does go below the 4 foot maximum. So they could go, of course, to a 24 by 24 inch. These ones right here are both 24 by 20, so typical signs that we may see. And then for your open house, these are typically 24 inches wide and 12 to 16 inches in height between the two. But the most common that we see in the town is actually the one on the left right there. So we did do an environmental assessment on here. The determination, there was no new environmental document that was required for this project because it was covered within the general plan EIR. We're talking about a text amendment that will have no significant or permanent change to the environment. So with that, staff's recommendation is that the Planning Commission, through Resolution 2018-13, take the following actions. A, to recommend that the City Council finds that no new environmental document is required for this project. And B, to recommend that City Council approval of text amendment application 2018-2, which will go before them as ordinance number 2018-008. And that will amend Title 10, Chapter 14, adding Article I to incorporate allowed placement of temporary real estate signage for single-family locations. That concludes staff's presentation. Happy to answer any questions that you have.
Commissioners, any questions for staff?
No. This is back a page or two. Six signs in the neighborhood.
Correct.
That's fairly flexible then. That's not any of this. There's no standards on that where it can be. It can be
no, we did
any
not.
Place in the neighborhood.
Right. In fact, the intent there, we didn't want to take it so specific to say you can only have six signs within, 500 feet or 1,000 feet or something of that nature, because depending on where the home is,
right,
that could be drastically
exactly
different. So we elected to utilize the language of within the neighborhood. Because
is that
we
a
know,
change from previous, or is that was that the
this,
previous language?
This is actually all new
it's
language.
All new, because they didn't have it before.
Yeah. Yep. So what we started with was a review of some of our neighboring communities and what type of exemptions they may have or may not have. In all honesty, when the conversation first came up to staff, we were surprised that there wasn't already an exemption for this. So we were definitely open to talking about it immediately and making sure that it was going to be covered.
And so they were okay with removal at the end of the day. That's a pretty standard procedure in their industry.
Yes. Interestingly enough, my mom was a real estate agent all my growing up and a broker for many, many years. So even when we had some of the draft stuff, I couldn't help but pass it to my mom and say, Mom, I know you'll give it to me straight, so tell me what you think here. And she actually pointed out about the removal, and she said that they prefer to remove their signs every single night because they're typically owned by the agent. The agent typically has
right,
to buy their
own
signs.
They don't want to be stolen or taken
exactly
or vandalized.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. So she said she always preferred to collect
decorations in hers. A teenager's room, something like that.
Yeah.
You know.
Never thought of it.
Any other questions? I have one. Is there any language in there regarding lighted signs, especially now that at 4:30 it starts getting dark and our hours are till 7 p.m.?
We don't have anything specific in this section here that would talk about the lighting of signs, but we would have lit signs that would be discussed within our sign ordinance and regulations that would still need to apply to this. I believe that with the placement of where it'll be and the fact that they're temporary, we shouldn't see any lighting, but that doesn't mean that somebody couldn't put a little clip-on light or something of that nature.
Yeah.
Which in all honesty, I don't think that our code enforcement would probably get too intense on unless it were an issue of obviously on someone's property who did not want it there or any type of health and safety concern.
And did you guys discuss with the realty community about, is it typical to have an open house past 5 o'clock? I don't think I've ever seen a open house past when it gets dark.
I've
never been to an open house in the dark.
Yeah, we just simply, we put those hours that we thought were would be okay with them, and they did not. That's not one of the items that they came back and said, you know, well, that's longer than we need, or they need to go later. Okay. Yeah, so we didn't have any specific discussions on that. That was just the initial time that we had put out, and they said that they were okay with it.
Okay, awesome.
I think you're right, though. I don't know if I've ever seen one past
five or six. Unless it's a special night showing, they'll advertise it as night showing. But I've never been to open house during the night, so I don't.
I don't know if I'd want to.
Yeah, me neither. Yeah. I want to see it during the day.
Can't see anything, right?
Yeah.
I want to really see the backyard.
Yeah, I want to see the backyard. Thanks, Rob.
That could also kind of accommodate, you know, because the open house may end at 5, but then they have to, you know, take everything down. And so it gives them enough time to go take it down. So
Very true.
Yeah, so it's 7:01.
Yeah. You know. And we're also talking about summer, too. I mean, summer, it you can possibly see an open house, you know, in the past.
Yeah.
A certain time in the summer because of the light. So,
okay. There's no further discussion. I will open the public hearing. Having nobody in the public arena, we will close that public hearing at this time. And consideration of this text amendment application 2018 pertaining to the exempt office site temporary real estate signage for a single family home. We'll do it through resolution number 2018-13. May I have a motion for your wishes on to approve 2018-13 or disapprove?
I make a motion to approve.
I'll second that.
Second.
Commissioner Barcellas?
Yes.
Commissioner Custodio?
Yes.
Commissioner Hudson?
Yes.
Chair Perez?
Yes. Okay, we'll go on to our item number 3 here, which is actually number 2 for us. But anyhow, consideration of text amendment application 2018-3 pertaining to mandatory sewer and water connections through resolution number 2018-14. Staff recommends the Planning Commission take the following action. Recommend that the City Council finds that no new environmental document is required for this project pursuant to California Environmental Quality Act guidelines, section 151.62 and 151.68(c)(2). As determined in environmental assessment number 2018-16. B, recommend to the City Council approval of text amendment application number 2018-3, ordinance number 2018-009, amending Title 8, Chapter 1, Article 3, and Title 8, Chapter 2, Article 2, which pertain to mandatory sewer and water connections. With that, I'll...
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll be taking this one as well tonight. A little more detail involved in this one than we just had on the last one. So at any time during my presentation, if you have questions, please feel free to interrupt me, because where this deals with two related but different areas of the code, I want to make sure that I'm able to talk about what the differences were and what the similarities are, the reason why they're connected, and make sure that there's a very good understanding of exactly what's being proposed here. So like I said, please feel free to jump in and question at any time. Basically, what we're looking to do here is we want to provide for the allowance of continued use of existing water and sewer infrastructure that is already in place, but that is in good working condition and passes health and safety testing appropriately. It's very important to note that this is going to apply only to water and sewer infrastructure, and this is for existing facilities only. So this would not apply to any new development. Any new development is required to connect to city services. Most often where we're going to see these type of items is through an annexation type of process. Because we are roughly at 90% capacity within our existing city limits right now, which is a great thing to have. That means that we've grown very intelligently and very conservatively. That also means that you're getting to the point where you will be seeing more annexation activity taking place as growth needs to happen within the community. One of the largest challenges that you will have when talking to property owners about annexation is, will I be able to keep my septic? Will I be able to keep my well? At current, the municipal code had different standards for water and for sewer. Different regulations as far as timeliness for connection, and some things that really kind of kept the two separate, not only confused, I think, a lot of property owners, but also had presented some challenges for property owners as well, because it didn't allow for flexibility. And so that's what we're hoping to be able to address through these items here. We want to be able to provide for usage and timeline consistency between both of these services, so that if you understand a connection to one, you will have at least a basic understanding of the required connection nexus for the other. And obviously we want to allow for flexibility for connection to the available services at the times that are the most convenient and needed by the property owners. So if they have access to connection and they wish to connect, we always want to make sure that that is available to them. However, if they have access to connection and they do not want to connect, and there is not a specific reason for system failure or health and public health and safety that they need to, we want to be able to allow them the flexibility to utilize the items that they already have on site and the things they've already installed on their personal property. What this does, allowing for this, it maintains the city's interest in both the health and safety oversight while still keeping that flexibility. Regardless of what they currently have on site, however, I want to make sure that it's understood that permanent system failure or non-certification, which means that even if the system were still operating but it were not able to be certified with public health and safety standards, any system would then result in a required connection, as long as the service, of course, is available. And we'll discuss that in a little more depth here in a minute. So to start off with water, the very first thing that this requirement does, the current code has in it a requirement that when services become available to your site, and available is defined in our code as within a right-of-way or an easement abutting your public property, abutting your personal property, then with 3 years from that time, you're required to connect. So it is extremely common, I would say, at least once a year, if not more, for us to reach out to property owners who are at or significantly past that time and to discuss connection with them. And the vast majority of the time, the conversation is, my well is still working. I have certifications from the county or state as appropriate. And my septic system is still operating properly. Why am I being told that I have to connect? And connection costs for just water alone, which is actually less than sewer, can get upwards of $30,000. And all of those items are the responsibility of the private property owner. So for a government agency to go in and tell someone that you need mm-hmm. to connect to this city service, if there isn't a failing system or a public health and safety reason, is concerning. Especially when it's you need to connect to the service and it's on your dime. So that was something that we felt very strongly about addressing, not only for the annexations that are coming forward to make sure that we can have better communication there, but for those that are already find themselves in this type of situation. So the first thing it does is it removes the three-year connection requirement, because we did not feel that that was appropriate or fair. However, all connection costs do remain the responsibility of the property owner, and I think that will make more sense as we go through. So connection to water services will be optional if and when the following items apply. So one, if service is not available in an easement or a roadway that is abutting your property, then obviously there's no requirement that you would need to connect there. And or if your current private system is operational and it's meeting the health and safety standards, and that would be determined by our public works director and or a county and state official, depending on what the system is and what type of regulation needs to go along with it. Connections would end up being required, and this is within 90 days of notice. This is one of the items where we're bringing the two, sewer and water, in together. Everything would be within 90 days of official notice that these items would need to be addressed. Before, you had one had a three-year timeline on it, the other one had a 90-day timeline on it. We're trying to make sure that there's consistency between the two. So connection would be required within 90 days of notice if and when a remodel or an addition to the building that they're doing is exceeding 25% of the current appraised value, which is standard. That language was already in the municipal code. Or if your system fails or is not meeting health and safety standards. And when we say fails there, we mean systemically fails. So if the system itself fails and or if it's not meeting health and safety standards, then connection would be required. If a property does connect to the city services, this is another item that is not currently allowed, but we thought was very, very important. It is not uncommon for people, particularly those that are annexed in, to still have some agricultural uses on their land, especially if they have some acreage. And we get asked almost every time, can we keep our well, disconnect the home, but can we keep the well, if it's in operation, to use exclusively for agricultural irrigation use? Up to this point, we've had to say no, it has to be abandoned completely. Again, this is an area where we wanted to provide flexibility for the property owners that have put a lot into their personal property. We want them to be able to utilize the items if they're still operational and operating within public health and safety. So that's another addition, that the exclusive ag irrigation use for existing wells would still be allowed if they're operating appropriately and they're passing health and safety. Let's see. My apologies. That says water up there. That's a typo. That one actually should have said sewer. So my apologies for that.
I have a question up to that point. Could a property owner choose to say his well was drying up, but his sewer was still good? Can they do 50-50?
They can.
They can.
Yeah. Okay. So this allows for either item to be addressed. All we were trying to do was create some consistency between the standards on the two, but still make sure that the property owner, and at any time if they want to connect, they have the ability to come in and say, we wish to connect. It's at their cost, of course, but if the service is available, then they are absolutely allowed to connect. And if they had the capital, in all honesty, they could even make the line available and then connect to it. So, yes, that is absolutely allowed. Does that answer the question?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Again, for the sewer, all connection costs remain the responsibility of the property owner. And what this one ends up doing is it separates regulations for within 100 feet of sewer service and not within 100 feet of sewer service. So available service when it comes to water means that it's within the public right-of-way or in an easement abutting your property. Mm-hmm. For sewer, for terms of sewer, it means it's within 100 feet of the property looking to be served. But we're going to separate out the regulations there about if it's available or not available. For properties that are not within 100 feet of a public sewer, connection will not be required if their septic system is properly operating. It's in proper operating form. Here's where it ends up getting a little bit different. If they're not within 100 feet and their septic system is not operating properly, even within the city limits, we will allow them to pull permits for repair or even full replacement of their system if it's not within 100 feet. That is a change. It had been before, if your septic system fails, even if the service isn't available, you have to pay to get to that service now. It's not uncommon to see that get up close to $100,000 or plus, depending on how far away you might be. Obviously a significant expense for a property owner. Because of that, we wanted to allow, again, as long as the public health and safety is being protected, we wanted to allow as much flexibility as we could for the property owners within Reedley. For properties that are within 100 feet of public sewer, connection will not be required if your septic system is in proper operating form. However, permits will not be issued for any type of repairs or replacement of said system if it begins to fail or is not testing in line with public health and safety. At that point, connection to the city system would be required within 90 days following the notice of their system failure. And again, that's whether that's system failure, systematic failure, or a non-certification, leaching into the water supply or something of that nature. If a property does elect to connect to their city service, then the complete septic system needs to be abandoned, needs to be cleaned and backfilled in accordance with what the building regulations are in place at that time. As of right now, if someone were to elect to do this today, they would have to pop the top off of that tank. They would have to clean any sludge out of the tank, and then it would have to be backfilled with clean sand and then topped with 2 feet of topsoil. So that's how it would look today. But we worded it with current regulations to make sure that if building code regulations change, that it's still relevant.
It just automatically changes as well.
Yeah. So with that, we did an environmental assessment on this one, and we determined, similar to the last one, that no new environmental document is required for this project, as the application will have no effects that were not examined in the City of Reedley general plan. And the reason why is because when the general plan took a look at everything, it assumed that anything that annexed in would connect to city services, which is a larger impact than allowing existing infrastructure mm-hmm. to stay in place. So we felt that it was appropriate for no additional environmental work. So with that, we're recommending the Planning Commission through Resolution 2018-14 take the following actions. A, to recommend that the City Council finds that no new environmental document is required for this project. And B, recommend to the City Council approval of text amendment application number 2018-3, which will be presented to them as ordinance number 2018-009. That will amend Title 8, Chapter 1, Article 3, and Title 8, Chapter 2, Article 2, which pertain to mandatory sewer and water connections, respectively. So that completes my presentation, and happy to answer any additional questions that the Commission has for us.
Commissioners, any questions for staff?
You probably answered this somewhere in your good discussion there, but the connection on page 3, connection required within 90 days of notice,
uh-huh.
if and when. So what triggers from a procedural, what triggers the connection is if they get noticed.
Correct. Yep.
So it's not necessarily the condition of, it's if the city says,
right.
we notice and therefore we're going to notice you.
Typically what ends up happening with water or sewer service is if someone starts to have an issue, a well is going dry, the first place they're usually going to come is to the city and say, we'd like to connect
okay.
to the city's
so
water.
Okay, so 99% of the time
absolutely.
They're coming your way.
It's
anyway.
Very rare that they don't come to us first because they're having some type of problem that either requires a permit to address or they're looking for you know,
that
connection to the city services to be able to help them. So our response at that time, of course, would be to go out on site and to take a look at the items that they have. And if something definitely has failed or if there's the public or health issue, at that point we would then go through a notice. And while we elected not to connect it to the text amendments themselves, we are also working right now with our finance department and with our city attorney to put in place a mechanism that a couple other agencies in the Valley have used that they've seen a lot of success with that will actually allow a property owner to borrow money and then pay it back through their tax assessment every single year for these type of health and safety upgrades and addressing. So we're looking for every avenue that we can to try to help property owners be able to address the appropriate needs that they have at their home that we believe appropriately line back to public health and safety.
Because once you give notice, you have 90 days to pay.
They would have 90 days to begin.
To begin. Okay.
Or repair it.
Yes.
Or repair.
Yep.
Okay.
Along the lines of I was going to ask a financial question for the resident, but I think you might have answered it. When you said the system must be abandoned
mm-hmm.
once you get done with the new, and the old one has to be,
yep.
is that over and above some of the costs that you talked about, or is that included in, I mean, that could be a pretty expensive process too.
Yeah, you know, it's
so that's
the majority of the time, obviously you have to have a certified contractor that's going to be on site to do your connections and everything that goes along with that. They're typically going to lump those items all in together. When they talk about connection to a system, they understand that there's an abandonment that is also
okay.
required there. Water, of course, is just a little bit different because typically all they do is just cut a line and cap it. Whereas, you know, septic, they have to deal with cleaning out the sludge and backfilling and everything. But it's more uncommon for them to not include that in their construction estimate up front than it would be the other way around.
Is this process that you've gone through tonight pretty standard among the other cities, or is this kind of a, hey, we want to take a different approach here?
You know, in all honesty, I would say for the other smaller agencies in the Central Valley, this is a little more progressive. You will typically
Sounds like
see
it.
This with, like City of Clovis started this, I would say 3, maybe 4 years ago at this point. When they started doing a lot of annexation activity moving out east toward the 168 and up toward the Shaver area, the majority of struggles that they had with the property owners was that people did not want to abandon the infrastructure that they already had in place. And so Clovis for a long time was doing one-by-one agreements with property owners, allowing them these exemptions. And then eventually someone said, why are we doing this one-by-one? Should we look at doing this citywide? They had their discussions on that. They're a larger agency, so their discussions took considerably longer. But I had spoken multiple times with their planning director there about their experience, and he had said that even with the one-by-one discussions that they had, that they have not had any issues with it. And in fact, it was not only received very well, but has significantly streamlined a lot of their activities and really helped them. It's as we talked more and more about it, we thought that it made sense, and it also laid out well for us in preparation for annexation activity.
So is that what prompted this?
The talks of annexation?
Right.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, because that was my question. It was like, what prompted you guys to decide
that's where the conversation really started. Okay. I would say started in depth. Mm-hmm. I think that there was musings of something different needs to be done when we had people consistently coming in and asking for a waiver of the 3-year connection requirement. The very first thing that we did with that was we started taking a look at why 3 years? What's a nexus for 3 years? And we were never able to find anything that stated that there was a reason. So it just looked like that was maybe a number that someone had thrown out there where they thought, well, that gives everybody a good amount of time to be able to save up or get ready for it or whatnot. But there just wasn't anything that we thought, you know what, that makes sense to tie that number to it. So that's the discussions took both of those items into account, but I think really got pushed to the forefront of us knowing we're getting ready to head into more annexation activity, and it makes a lot of sense to lay the groundwork first instead of dealing with one-by-one agreements with individual property owners.
Okay.
Any other questions? Okay, this being a public hearing, we'll open up the conversation to the public. Noting that there's no one in the public, we will close the public session. Consideration of text amendment application 2018-3 pertaining to the mandatory sewer water conditions. Our motion will be that through 2018-14, we take action. So what are your thoughts? Do I hear a motion?
I want to do a motion to approve.
Do I hear a second?
I second that motion to approve.
Oh.
Commissioner Custodio?
Yes.
Commissioner Hudson?
Yes.
Commissioner Barcelos?
Yes.
Chair Perez?
Yes. All right.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
No director's report.
You're getting suspicious.
Maybe that was one of the Freudian moments, right? Where it was like, well, I'm going to be talking so much during this meeting, I don't think they're going to hear my voice anymore. Mm-hmm. To be honest, we can probably go over the within the future agenda items. I think that we could touch enough on the director's report items. So for our December 5th meeting. That is a special meeting. Thank you again for everybody and your flexibility to get together a quorum for that. We have been working very hard over the last couple of years on a project to be located at the northeast corner of Frankwood and South. And we are now ready to bring that forward to the Planning Commission for various actions to be taken on that. Because of how many hurdles there have been to get this project ready to this point, the project applicant needed some type of action to take place in 2018 in order to keep the funding mechanisms behind the overall development feeling comfortable and as though things were moving forward. So in this instance, the difference between December and January could have been a project not coming into the community that we've been working very hard on. So thank you very much for your flexibility there. But that's what you'll be hearing on December 5th. I don't think, do we have any additional smaller items on that date? I think that's it, isn't it?
Yeah, that should be it. Okay. But just a quick comment about December 5th. So a couple of months ago, we did have Commissioner visit. He did let us know that he had gotten a new job, and so he wouldn't be able to attend meetings anymore. So he did withdraw his commission duties. So we sent out a notice and have a vacancy. And so we did fill that vacancy, or we will actually next Tuesday. We did have someone apply, and his name is Bill Conrad, and he is the general manager. Excited to be on board, and so his first meeting will be on December 5th.
We thought we'd just throw him into a,
yeah,
a big item right up front. Baptism by fire, I guess.
And then just a quick, because we have the regular meeting that is on December 6th, so just to avoid confusion, we still have to cancel that one officially because it's So first you'll get a heavy agenda for December 5th, and then the next day you'll get a cancellation notice for the 6th. So just keep that in mind because we're still on for the 5th, but you'll see that because we still have to do that. So.
Yep. Thank you, Ellen. Okay. We're canceling the December 20th meeting. We always try to go dark in the second meeting of November and December to respect everybody's holidays, being able to spend time with family and friends at that time. Similar to January 3rd, we work very hard to try to avoid those items around the new year as well as the holiday season finishes out. But we will be scheduled for a regular meeting on January 20th. We do anticipate right now that there will be multiple items on that agenda. And we actually anticipate that we will have a fairly busy beginning of the year. There's a lot of things that are getting to various checkpoints or even finish lines for their project. So it's good. There's a lot of good things going on in Reedley right now. We're excited to continue to push all those items forward. And then I think I would just note that on the 14th of this month, Ellen and I will be at Fresno LAFCO for the official annexation consideration for Manning and Buttonwillow, a project that you guys have already seen, which is the United Health Center Clinic. So they will be taking action on the annexation there. And if approved there, 30 days following that action, it would actually be officially recorded. And at that time, then the annexation would take place. And hopefully, in the very near future following that, we would then start seeing construction activity taking place. So,
was that just for the 5 acres or the entire 20 acres?
So the annexation is for the entire area. We of course, will only see construction taking place right now for just the corner where the clinic is. Any additional development that would happen would go through the site plan review process.
Now, if I recall, that was 20. Is that 20 plus?
No,
is it 40?
Actually, and it's the 5 and the 20 after, as I understood it, so I could be wrong.
So the total?
Yeah, total is 19 acres, and that includes UHC. Yep.
It does.
Okay. So it would be 19 total.
But then the other portion that was retained by the family, that's not coming into the.
That will not be part of the annexation. Okay. Just the 20 acres, just under 20.
Okay.
And I think that's probably it.
You have a quick correction. It is actually January 17th instead of the 20th. It's the 17th.
I thought that, but
that's the one you
thought I must have got that wrong. Yeah,
so emailed us about, right?
Yeah, on the 17th. Yeah, whether there was a preference of the 10th or the 17th. So
it's on the.
And we have it listed as January 20th, but it should be January 17th.
It's on the 17th. Yep. Okay, yeah, that's correct. That's what you gave us in the email.
Yeah, and that is a Thursday.
Yeah, I don't think anybody would be interested in that.
Well, you're open on Sunday.
Yeah, right. Okay. You know where I am. The 17th is when I'm out of town.
That's right.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I was the one that said 17th didn't work.
Does anybody have anything for the good of the meeting?
I just want to know, when are they going to be done with Reed?
Soon. Yeah.
Soon.
Very, very soon. I want to say the last update that I heard from John was they anticipate it will be done by the end of next week.
Just
I mean, cleared out and everything and done, striped and
complete. I just go around.
Yeah.
I'm one of those. That's usually my
pattern. I go around. I, go right on.
I totally go around.
Enjoy the traffic.
Do
all
you?
My friends on Reed.
Sure. I don't like the way the students are like, I got to get to class. I'm like, I'll just stay away. It's okay.
Yeah, believe it or not, it has gone according to schedule. I mean, road construction is just, it's never fun. But this one has actually gone according to schedule. I think that they may have had a day or two delay, which is
the
completely within the realm of reality. Yeah, it wasn't one of those items that just got pushed off and off and off. It'll be great when it's done.
Oh, it'll be real good.
Yeah,
everybody will be excited to see it. And I found it entertaining to watch some of the people and to hear of some of the people.
Yes.
Maybe it was you.
Okay, if there's nothing else, then we'll adjourn this meeting.
Thank you.
Awesome.
Thank you.